It was an important-looking village, with a fine old church and large churchyard in the heart of it, and two or three large brick-and-stone homesteads, with well-walled orchards and ornamental weathercocks, standing close upon the road, and lifting more imposing fronts than the rectory, which peeped from among the trees on the other side of the churchyard. A village which showed at once the summits of its social life, and told the practised eye that there was no great park and manor-house in the vicinity, but that there were several chiefs in Raveloe who could farm badly, quite at their ease, drawing enough money from their bad farming in those war times to live in a rollicking fashion, and keep a jolly Christmas, Whitsun, and Eastertide. It was 15 years since Silas Marner had first come to Raveloe. He was then simply a pallid young man, with prominent, short-sighted brown eyes, whose appearance would have had nothing strange for people of average culture and experience. But for the villagers near whom he had come to settle, it had mysterious peculiarities which corresponded with the exceptional nature of his occupation, and his advent from an unknown region called Northard. So had his way of life. He invited no comer to step across his door-sill, and he never strolled into the village to drink a pint at the Rainbow, or to gossip at the wheelwrights. He sought no man or woman, save for the purposes of his calling, or in order to supply himself with necessaries. And it was soon clear to the Raveloe lasses that he would never urge one of them to accept him against her will, quite as if he had heard them declare that they would never marry a dead man come to life again. This view of Marner's personality was not without another ground than his pale face and unexampled eyes, for Jem Rodney, the mole-catcher, averred that one evening as he was returning homeward, he saw Silas Marner leaning against a stile, with a heavy bag on his back, instead of resting the bag on the stile as a man in his senses would have done, and that, on coming up to him, he saw that Marner's eyes were set like a dead man's, and he spoke to him, and shook him, and his limbs were stiff, and his hands clutched the bag as if they'd been made of iron. But just as he had made up his mind that the weaver was dead, he came all right again, like, as you might say, in the winking of an eye, and said, "Good night," and walked off. All this Jem swore he had seen, more by token that it was the very day he had been mole-catching on Squire Cass's land, down by the old saw-pit. Some said Marner must have been in a fit, the word which seemed to explain things otherwise incredible. But the argumentative Mr. Macy, clerk of the parish, shook his head and asked if anybody was ever known to go off in a fit and not fall down. A fit was a stroke, wasn't it? And it was in the nature of a stroke to partly take away the use of a man's limbs and throw him on the parish if he got no children to look to. No, no, it was no stroke that would let a man stand on his legs like a horse between the shafts and then walk off as soon as you can say gee. But there might be such a thing as a man's soul being loose from his body, and going out and in like a bird out of its nest and back. And that was how folks got over wise, for they went to school in this shellless state, to those who could teach them more than their neighbours could learn with their five senses and the parson.